ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Friday, the 12th of September. I'm Rachel Mealy, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people in Brisbane. In the United States, the FBI has released images of a person of interest as the investigation into the fatal shooting of right-wing activist Charlie Kirk continues. Police investigating the assassination have recovered a high-powered weapon believed to be the one used to kill the popular influencer. Our North America correspondent Carrington Clark is at the Utah Valley University campus. He joined me a short time ago.
Well, the search is underway, and this is a multi-agency operation, we are told. And although we are being told that it is rapidly moving, at this point, they still haven't apprehended the suspect. Now, they have released relatively grainy photos of someone they're describing as a person of interest. It appears to be a relatively young man, dressed in a long-sleeve black shirt, or T-shirt that appears to have an American bald eagle flying across an American flag. He's wearing a cap and he's wearing sunglasses. He has not been identified by name, which seems to indicate that perhaps they haven't been able to figure out his identity based on facial recognition. It has been now more than 24 hours since this shooting took place. And obviously that the longer it gets, perhaps the more difficult it will be to find this person. As I said, at this point, it's only a person of interest. The FBI has also offered a $100,000 US reward for help with finding this person. The authorities have said that they've located a bolt-action rifle, which they believe was the weapon used to kill the podcaster Charlie Kirk yesterday. So this was Special Agent Robert Bowles speaking a short while ago.
This morning I can tell you that we have recovered what we believe is the weapon that was used in yesterday's shooting. It is a high-powered bolt-action rifle. That rifle was recovered in a wooded area where the shooter had fled. The FBI laboratory will be analyzing this weapon. Investigators have also collected footwear impression, a palm print, and forearm imprints for analysis. As to the community, I can tell you that this was a targeted event. We don't believe that the community is at risk. However, we are exhausting every resource to find him, and we will do so.
FBI Special Agent Robert Bowles there. Carrington, Charlie Kirk was a huge figure in conservative politics in the US. What are the major players saying now?
Yeah, although Charlie Kirk did not have an official role with the Trump administration, he was very well connected within the administration, including having a very close relationship with the Vice President J.D. Vance. And J.D. Vance is now traveling to Utah, and there are multiple reports that he's doing that in part to help to take the body of Charlie Kirk away from this state and to help support the family at this time. President Donald Trump has again paid honour to Charlie Kirk's memory and says that he will be awarded the highest civilian honour here in the United States. That's a Presidential Medal of Freedom. And we're also hearing from many members of the conservative movement of just how big a loss they see Charlie Kirk. Now, he was somebody who made his name. He was only 31 years old, remember, when he died. But he'd made his name over the past decade for being willing to go into areas which conservatives used to think were basically given over to the progressives. That is, namely, campuses, high school campuses, university campuses. And it was during one such event where he goes and invites people to debate with him where he met his end. And there is concern about how they will replace him, given he was, they see, so instrumental in increasing the support for the conservative side of politics, the Republicans here in the United States at the last election. A lot was written at the time, and there's been a lot of analysis that part of the reason that Donald Trump won was because of the increased support, particularly among young men. And Charlie Kirk was seen as somebody who was able to persuade them and get them motivated to come out. So this is a big loss, and obviously there is a big debate currently in the United States about exactly why we are seeing this growth in political violence. And although some conservatives are accusing the Democrats of being much worse when it comes to stoking hate, there have been acts of political violence on both sides, including the death of a Democrat Minnesota politician earlier this year. So it is an issue that is obviously still gaining a huge amount of attention attention here in the United States, and obviously something that has been closely watched politically, but also people are shocked by just such an extraordinary act of political violence in broad daylight here in Utah.
Carrington Clark there in Utah. Many within Australia's Indian community say the Liberal Party has work to do to repair the harm done by Senator Jacinta Nampajimpa-Price's comments on migration. So how will the coalition move on from what's been a damaging week? Political reporter Romy Stevens filed this story.
7 years ago, the federal Liberal member for La Trobe, Jason Wood, decided it was time for change.
It was after the 2018 state election where we kind of got wiped out locally, and I said, if we keep doing the same thing, we'd just lose our seats. So I went on a bit of a mission to get the Indian community on side.
That began by taking up cricket.
As I was fielding, started asking me questions, what's the difference between Liberal and Labor? And I said, well, we're pretty much look at you guys as being entrepreneurs and want to back you and support you.
He also sought to learn more about religions like Sikhism and Hinduism. 2021 census data shows 7% of the La Trobe electorate population was born in India, second behind Australia. Jason Wood was re-elected in 2013 and has held the seat since then. Many within Australia's Indian diaspora believe the coalition can help repair the damage done by Liberal Senator Jacinta Nampajimpa-Price's comments on Indian migrants last week by improving engagement.
I think there's got to be a lot of community building exercise and genuine rather than tokenism, because that's what you see with a lot of these parties, just us coming out to events or not. It's actually having discussions on policies and things that affect us as Australian community first.
Amar Singh is president of Turbans for Australia and was named Australia's local hero for 2023. He says all politicians need to avoid creating division.
You as a politician, as an elected person, have a lot of responsibility on your shoulder to lead the community in a different direction, and they should work on social cohesion and harmony overall, because we've seen a lot of that lacking in the recent times.
Susan Lee moved to dump Senator Nampajimpa-Price from her front bench on Wednesday before apologising for Senator Price's remarks. Indian Federation of Victoria President Vasan Srinivasan, who ran for the Liberal Party in 2002, says he's impressed with how Ms Lee has handled the situation.
She has taken a step to take action against a member who made unnecessary remarks against one particular community. If she would have said all communities, it's a different story.
But he's warning all politicians against using migrant communities to score political points.
Be gentle, be open. I say this to both the parties, you know, to not use one community as your political football. Things happen for various reasons that shouldn't affect a community's growth in this country.
Juliet Peach is a leading Griffith University scholar in migration politics and political behaviour across both Australia and Southeast Asia. She says Indian migrants are typically very politically engaged, and many would have been paying attention to Senator Nampajimpa-Price's comments.
Other migrant groups who may come from countries where they may have less experience of voting. And so that's different for migrants who are born in India, where they've got more experience with living in a democracy.
In a statement on Wednesday night, Jacinta Nampajimpa-Price said despite returning to the backbench, she would continue to speak up on issues which are in the national interest, such as migration. Juliet Peach says discussions around migration and population growth are important to still have, so long as groups aren't targeted during them.
It's important for leaders to address those concerns, but not blame immigration or blame any ethnic migrant group for those concerns.
Juliet Peach from Griffith University, ending that report by Romy Stevens. A Northern Territory regulator embroiled in controversy over a leaking Darwin gas plant also had a paid role with a lobbying firm connected to the plant. A leading anti-corruption expert says it's one of the most obvious conflicts of interest he's ever seen. Josh Robertson has this exclusive report.
As chair of the NTEPA, Paul Vogel is top cop on the beat when it comes to the gas industry in the top end. But it's not his only paid gig, as he told a federal Senate inquiry last year.
With Canning's Purple, I am on a hourly rate when I do provide advice to them and their clients. I provide strategic advice around environmental approvals and assessment processes.
Purple is a lobbying firm. Senator David Pocock noted its clients then included gas company Inpex, which Mr. Vogel regulated in the NT.
It seems to me like there is a huge conflict of interest. If the head of the CGA was found to be working part-time for a firm that lobbies for pharmaceutical clients, that'd be out of a job. How do you explain this?
It turns out that Inpex owns an 11% stake in the Darwin Liquefied Natural Gas Plant, where a major leak of climate-polluting methane was hidden from the public for almost 20 years until it was revealed last week by the ABC. And Santos has been cleared to use the plant in a new gas project until 2050 without fixing the leak, in what Mr. Pocock says is a national scandal.
This is one of the worst methane leaks in the country's history, and it needs to be fixed.
Mr. Vogel had a key role in decisions about the leak, but told last year's Senate inquiry he hadn't disclosed his side job.
No, because it's not a conflict, because I have no commercial arrangement and do not provide advice to Inpex whatsoever. And I was unaware that Purple provided any sort of advice to Inpex as well. So this is news to me.
Barrister Geoffrey Watson from the Centre of Public Integrity disagrees.
This is one of the most obvious instances of a conflict of interest that I've ever seen. This is such an obvious problem that I regard as unique, a clear-cut case of a perception of bias, which needs to be corrected as soon as possible because it's a very important matter for the environment, for people of the Northern Territory.
Mr. Watson says Mr. Vogel's work for an industry lobbyist should rule him out of decisions about the plant's future.
I think you could go a lot further than that, frankly, and say whether or not the gentleman's job is tenable.
The NT's Labor opposition says when it was in government, it wasn't told about the leak or Mr. Vogel's undisclosed consultancy, raising serious concerns about conflict of interest and transparency. But the current NT government says it's a matter for the independent EPA. In a statement, Mr. Vogel says he's never given advice to any companies the EPA regulates, and there's no conflict of interest, perceived or actual.
Josh Robertson reporting. Battle lines are being drawn on university campuses as thousands of staff are sacked and courses are cut in the biggest shake-up since the pandemic. Unions are blaming corporate managers, accusing them of cutting deeper than necessary, while university leaders say they're doing their best with a perfect storm of challenges. It comes as the Vice-Chancellor of the Australian National University resigned over increasing scrutiny due to forced redundancies and her handling of complaints. National Education reporter Connor Duffy takes a look.
Physicist Ivan Maximov was praised on national television when he earned an Ig Nobel Prize from Harvard University for his creative work measuring sound waves in earthworms. And his work on non-laser light earned a coveted future fellowship from the Australian Research Council. But for the second time in 3 years, the quantum computing researcher has been made redundant as job cuts sweep Australia's university sector.
It derails my career. Personally, I'm the only breadwinner, so it's the only source of income, and we have two kids to feed.
His employer, Charles Sturt University, is cutting costs after its international student numbers plummeted by 90% over 5 years. There are similar challenges at nearly half of Australia's 39 public universities. Dr. Alison Barnes from the National Tertiary Education Union estimates more than 3,500 jobs have been cut across the sector in the last 12 months.
People are feeling disheartened, demoralised. It's like a dark cloud hanging over our workplaces, and people are not coping with the uncertainty and the stress.
A long-running Senate inquiry into university governance has been hearing allegations of excessive management spending, and Dr. Barnes believes the Vice-Chancellors responsible for day-to-day management are cutting deeper and harder than necessary.
It's a crisis which has many different facets. The use of consultants, over $700 million being sent on consultants in 1 year. It's the job losses which impact on our capacity to educate and support our students. It's the executive remuneration with over 306 people employed at universities earning more than their state premiers.
However, University's Australia Chair, Professor Carolyn Evans, says the university sector is facing a perfect storm of challenges. Professor Evans said weak domestic and international student growth, as well as systemic underfunding of teaching and research, left universities without options.
I think we've seen the absolute perfect storm of problems engulfing the system over the last decade or so.
Professor Evans says nearly 70% of the sector is in deficit and believes union criticisms of corporate management are unfair.
The bottom line is you cannot keep spending more money than you bring in. That's true of universities. That's true of any responsible entity. And you can say it's corporate to take that position, but if you take any other position, sooner or later, you will run your university into the ground.
But Ivan Maximov believes universities need to focus more on providing a public good than worrying about revenue.
Unis have become like a corporation. They have stakeholders, and those stakeholders are not the public.
A Charles Sturt University spokesperson said in a statement the cuts were regrettable but necessary, and as a regional university, they'd been hit especially hard by sector changes.
Connor Duffy. Australia's music licensing and copyright body warns the rapid growth of AI poses a particular threat to Indigenous musicians through both loss of income and cultural theft. As James Viver reports, AI music generation models will reference First Nations language and culture without permission.
This song was created with an AI music generator called Suno. Just one model creating a digital deluge of AI images, video and music, also known as AI slop. But this AI track has something a little more sinister.
I'm kind of speechless.
Sienna Stubbs is a proud Yolngu woman. Suno was able to create this AI song in her traditional language.
I didn't know whether to be impressed or concerned. It's conflicting. I don't know how to feel.
The ABC entered a simple word prompt describing style, instrumentation, theme and mood, and crucially, the use of Yolngu language. In a matter of seconds, this track came into being.
I got a few of these phrases that could have been right, but they said it the wrong way. Yolngu Mata is a very melodic sounding language. It depends on pronunciation, but then also the melody in which you say a word. If you say it a certain way, it can change the meaning of that sentence.
Sienna worries Suno and other AI models can access her traditional song lines.
The mothers walk together. The children belong to country. That's right. We do transfer knowledge from the mother to the child, you know. These are stories that are told.
Often told as creation stories, songlines contain information on law, customs, protocol and geography, and in all cases are deeply sacred.
I've been curious about how far AI can go currently and can it replicate songlines. It's scary that it could generate those sentences and those words and that story.
Suno threw up no guide rails or cultural warnings when generating this music. It's this unfettered access that Australia's music licensing body says undermines Indigenous artists' uniqueness.
When we talk about what Indigenous music looks like on the global stage, it doesn't sound like anything else.
Leah Flanagan is an Indigenous singer-songwriter and the director of the APRA AMCOS Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Music Office.
What is our cultural identity as Australian people? So when you were an artist who was creating that and it's getting trawled and scooped up like that and spat out, it's tokenising people's lived experience.
The Australian government is currently considering if and how to regulate AI. It's also developing Indigenous cultural and intellectual property laws.
So if these machines are data scraping and taking our music, you know, artists should be getting paid for that. Like that, this stuff should be licensed properly. We can be strong. We can be really, really firm with our copyright law.
While Sienna Stubbs is wary of AI, with the right rules in place, she can see how the technology could benefit society.
I've grown up bilingual, and so it's something that I would have been interested to access if an AI could teach me how to speak Yolngu Mata when I'm not sitting next to my grandmother.
Yolngu woman Sienna Stubbs ending that report by James Viver. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Rachel Mealy.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. It was another act of political violence in a nation too accustomed to it. Charlie Kirk, a 31-year-old right-wing political activist, was shot and killed while he addressed a crowd at a US university. Today, Jeff Kabaservis from the centre-right think tank, the Niskanen Centre, on what unfolded. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.